Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Wow, Marty Letts delivers the goods yet again in this Throwback Thursday edition of the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where he starts talking about some priceless negotiation wisdom that we all really need to understand. Really appreciate this amazing conversation with Marty Letts. I think you're going to love it. Enjoy. Marty Letts, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Mark?
Oh, man, I'm so happy that I've got you on the line. I've been wanting to have this conversation with you for quite some time because after the massive success of the release of the show about the Trump negotiations and all that kind of fun stuff, we got such good and bad feedback on that. The bad feedback where people are like, how dare you? How dare you say that about the president? Then we had to say things like, what do you mean? Like, say what? Say things that are factually correct. So we had to manage the fallout, so to speak, on a couple of people, but it was great because we got to have actual conversations about, hey, look, this is the history. Here's what we found. This is what the evidence shows. And it was just a really, really good conversation. And so my hope is that with the discussion that we're going to have today, it's going to be about what are the highs and what are the lows of negotiation? I mean, you've been there and you've done that. And I really want to understand from you what's been the best negotiation, what's been the worst, and why. But before we get into that discussion, maybe you could tell the listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Sure. My name is Marty Letts. I've been teaching and training business professionals and lawyers how to more effectively negotiate full-time since 1998. Mark was just talking about my second book on negotiation, The Real Trump Deal, an eye-opening look at how he really negotiates. My first book came out in 2004. It was called Gain the Edge. It still is called Gain the Edge, Negotiating to Get What You Want. And I love negotiation. I love talking about it. I love teaching it. I love consulting on it. And I'm very pleased to be able to have another opportunity to join you on this podcast, Mark. So
you're definitely a favorite guest of ours. We certainly appreciate all of the effort and time that you put into preparing for the show. And I know that the last time the listeners got a ton out of it. I guess first things first, man, let's get into understanding what was your best negotiation, not necessarily best result, but what do you view as like a highlight negotiation in your career?
Well, I think, Mark, when we're talking about negotiations, what I'd like to do, if I could, is break it out into personal negotiations and professional negotiations.
Love that.
Because as both of us, I think, recognize, whenever two people are interacting with each other and they're communicating and they have interests, possibly mutual interests, to satisfy, they're negotiating. And so in terms of the best negotiation, it's an ongoing negotiation now that has taken place over the course of approximately 18 years, and it is with my wife. So the initial negotiation started when I first met her, as most negotiations do. We sometimes think about the formal negotiation process simply as that offer concession stage of the process where we're going back and forth. But as you and I well know, Mark, the negotiation begins at the very beginning.
That's right.
With first impressions, first comments, first reactions. And the first time I met my wife was really the beginning of a, you can call it a courtship, you can call it a negotiation. But here we are about 18 years later, and we are continuing to negotiate.
Well, congratulations on the success of your marriage, man. I mean, I think a lot of people can learn from that, because when we're having those personal negotiations and the professional negotiations, sometimes people think of those as approaching them into two different ways. And that's not necessarily true, because we can apply our business negotiations practice to our own personal lives. And I think a lot of people think of those things as different, but they're not. What do you think most people screw up when it comes to personal negotiations?
I would characterize that as probably the most important thing is we don't listen and deeply listen and hear what the other person is saying to nearly the same degree as we should. And perhaps I'm bringing a little bit of my personal bias to this. The thing that sort of created what I call an aha moment back when I was in law school, I was taking a course from the co-author of Getting to Yes, Roger Fisher, and he asked every student, he said, select a negotiation in which you've engaged in the past that you don't think went particularly well. We're going to role play it. We're going to videotape it. And then we're going to talk about it and debrief and evaluate what happened. And I had recently, at that time, this is well before I met my wife, I had recently broken up, or I should, I guess, be more accurate. My girlfriend at the time had broken up with me. And I wouldn't say I was reeling, but I was confused and I wasn't sure really what had happened.
Right.
And when we role played that negotiation, I began to really realize that at that time, and I think many negotiators, especially business negotiators, tend to perceive the process as one of persuading and arguing and convincing. And what I really learned and what opened my eyes to a great degree was that it's much more about asking questions and getting information and listening and trying to understand and really focusing on your counterparts. Because if you can find out what their interests are, what their needs are, instead of arguing, convincing, you can simply lay out some of the options that may satisfy their interests and also, of course, satisfy your interests as well. And so the process of deeply and intently listening, hearing, understanding, and then moving from there is crucial in not only personal negotiations, but very much so in terms of professional negotiations. I think that's the number one biggest mistake that sales professionals make in the process is that they perceive it's about selling something to someone as opposed to finding out what their interests and needs are and exploring options that may satisfy their interests.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you've brought up that last point, I think, is the most important thing, exploring their interests. What do you mean by that?
Well, the classic example that was first articulated in Getting to Yes by Fisher and Urey, and that's been taught ever since that book was, I think, originally published in 1981, which obviously is the classic in the industry, at least for a few more years, right? Until my first book's been out there a little longer. No, seriously. What Fisher and Urey talk in terms of the difference between positions and interests, positions are what you want, relatively easy to find out. What they say they want, and interest is why they want it.
Oh,
what's the driver? What's the motivator? What's the next level of information exchange? I sometimes think about it as the hidden agenda. What's really going on? Why are they pushing so hard to have that 30-day payment term? Or why is it so important that they get 50% upfront? You know, because if they're not willing or able to share that, then sometimes that's going to be the driving force. A quick example that's shared by one of my colleagues in the industry. He shares the example of a U.S. company that wanted to get some supply from a European company, and they wanted to be the exclusive distributor here in the United States, and they reached impasse on that particular point. The European company said, no, under no circumstances are we going to only sell to you. And so the U.S. company looked internally. They said, who's our best, our most creative, our most effective negotiator? Sent him over to Europe to meet with that other company, and he went over there and he asked them one question. What was that question? He asked them why they wouldn't agree to exclusivity. And he found out that that company was providing a very small amount of product to the cousin of the CEO. And the CEO was unwilling to throw his cousin under the proverbial bus. Now, if you find out that information, is a relatively easy solution, right? We just simply carve out that amount of supply that's going to the CEO's cousin, and we'll be exclusive as to everybody else. But they never got down to that next level of information exchange, which really could only have been achieved by drilling down to that interest and not that position. By the way, it's not a coincidence, I think, that that company spent probably thousands of dollars to send their person over to meet in person.
Wow.
In Europe, because it's far more difficult sometimes to find out some of these interests on the telephone or by email than in person.
Because you need to understand the body language behind it. Why is that more important?
Well, part of it is understanding the body language, but part of it also is developing the rapport, finding those common personal interests, creating an environment in which they're going to feel relatively safe about sometimes sharing some information that may not immediately be to their strategic advantage unless you're willing to share back. So you can create an atmosphere and an environment and a relationship in person that, frankly, is more difficult to create on the telephone, by email, or through some of these more recent technological ways of communicating.
Yeah, brilliant. Let's switch gears a little bit. I want to understand from you, what about the worst negotiation that you've been through? What about experiencing that? What was it, number one, and what happened? Walk us through it.
All of the worst negotiations in which I've engaged have been those in which either I or someone I was working with really didn't sufficiently prepare and think through all of the dynamics of the issues.
Yes.
And of course, you can say that hindsight is 20/20, and it is. But if you're sitting at your desk, telephone rings, you look at the caller ID, you have an idea why. Maybe it's your counterpart. You have an idea why they might be calling. Maybe you just pick up the phone and you think, hey, I'm good enough to do this on my feet. I'm pretty smart. I'm pretty articulate. I can jump in and engage. Well, you know what? There's no substitute for preparation, and not just preparation on the substance, not just learning the facts, but really preparing sufficiently for the process. And I think that's really, really critical. The other thing I think that has led, at least personally, to my most challenging negotiations is early on in many negotiations, I'm not sure in a lot of contexts I really had a good comprehensive understanding of my goal and of my interests. And so sometimes you sort of fumble around in a negotiation, and hopefully you take the time at some point to sit back and evaluate that and more substantially realize that. I'll give you an example. I was helping a guy sell his company, a chain of medical clinics here in the U.S. a number of years ago. And as we're going through this process, and he had hired an investment banker, and the investment banker brought me in on the deal, and it quickly became, well, it actually didn't quickly become apparent, but as we went through the process, even though he said he was ready to sell, he really wasn't ready to sell.
Right.
He hadn't set up his company. He hadn't done his financial homework. He had built this business. It was a very successful business, but he really wasn't ready to let go. And that came across to the potential buyers. And as a result, we basically, the process did not conclude in a deal. And he had to go back and he had to do a number of things. He ended up selling the company several years later, which was probably what we should have noted early on. I think if we had really spent the time and the effort early on doing some of that homework, we would probably have just said, hey, we got to do a timeout. Now's not the right time. You need to do A, B, C, D, E, and F. And then come back to us in 2 years after you've done that, and we can come back. Because it quickly became apparent that there were things that needed to happen before it was really going to sell at a level that would have satisfied his goals and interests.
Yeah.
And as a result, I had that deal in part on a success fee basis, and as I do most of those types of deals. And obviously, I spent just a lot of time and effort on that deal that did not turn out ideally, at least financially from my perspective. The ideal thing about it, however, Mark, and I think this is a really crucial part of, I think, everyone hopefully who's listening, is we learn from our mistakes. And in fact, we learn more from our mistakes than we do from our successes. And so I learned a very important lesson at that point that I've at least tried to implement in a different way since then.
I mean, it sounds like me that what you're saying is the vast majority of the failures that you've experienced in negotiation have been, or others have experienced that you've witnessed, have been a result of lack of preparation, essentially.
I think it's lack of preparation, but beyond that, it's not just lack of preparation, it's lack of the sort of deep thinking and analysis in that preparation that needs to occur in order for that negotiation ultimately to lead to success.
Yeah, understanding those interests collectively.
You know, it's easy to say, okay, what is my goal, and to identify a goal. But the goal setting process is really not an easy one. And sometimes it takes hours and days and weeks to really think through what is your true goal. There's a perfect example of this that I share in my seminars. It comes out of one of my colleagues' books on negotiation, Richard Schell, his book, Bargaining with Advantage. And he tells a story about how one of the founders of Sony Corporation, Akiya Morita, had an early opportunity back in 1955, shortly after it was founded, had an opportunity to sell 100,000 transistor radios here in the United States through Bulova. And Bulova, at the time, had an extensive retail distribution network, an extensive reputation. And the deal was that Sony would take this new innovative electronics product, this transistor radio, they would sell it to Bulova for $29.95, and they'd stamp, of course, the Bulova name on it because Bulova had the reputation, Bulova had the retail distribution network. Well, Morita goes to Sony's board and basically said, should we do the deal? And Sony's board said, absolutely do the deal. It's a great deal. It's for several times our working capital from the previous few years. Well, Morita went back and he thought about it. In fact, he took a couple of weeks to think about it. And this was just this one discrete area of the negotiation preparation process. We thought about it for 2 weeks. He ended up rejecting the deal. Well, why did he reject the deal? Against the advice of his board? Because his long-term goal was to get the Sony brand name out there as consistent and synonymous with innovative new electronics products. He rejects the deal with Bulova. He goes with a smaller distributor. They stamp the Sony name on that transistor radio, and of course, the rest is business history. Morita said that was the quote-unquote best business decision that he ever made. And it goes back to a fundamental point, easy to understand. Sometimes it's very, very difficult to actually implement. You need to know at the beginning of the process where you want to be at the end of the process in order to design a strategic way to get there.
Love that. So brilliant. You know, for the listeners today who are thinking to themselves, okay, what am I doing that's maybe hindering me from that negotiation success? I think oftentimes we don't do enough of that, right? We don't do enough reflective analysis after the fact in the negotiations that don't do well, but also the negotiations that go well to determine what we're doing well and what we're not doing well. And listeners, if you're listening into this, I think one thing that Marty does incredibly well is he's able to analyze at a very deep level what works and what doesn't work across the research that he's done. And I think one thing that we can take away from this is put in more time and effort to understanding what's going well and what's not going well so that we can apply it to our new negotiations as things go forward, because that's the only way that we're going to improve. Marty, if you were going to leave the listeners with a piece of advice about negotiation based on your experience, I mean, you've done so much, what would it be?
Mark, let me give you a couple if it's okay. First of all, I want to reemphasize how important the point is that you just made. Debrief after every one of your significant negotiations. Yes. And I tell all the people in my training programs, you need to keep a running list over the course of your entire career of what works, what doesn't work, and how you can improve in your negotiation. Start a document and keep track of them. And then before your future negotiations, go back and review it. Oh yeah, I got to remember to do this. Or, oh, I got to remember not to do that. That's really, really powerful. And that will ensure that not only do you continue to learn on a lifelong basis, but you continue to improve and improve your effectiveness. So that's the first thing I would say. The second thing I would say, and I conclude all of my programs in this way with the following additional pearls of wisdom. Number two, prepare, prepare, prepare. The legendary UCLA basketball coach John Wooden said, failing to prepare is preparing to fail. But don't just prepare on the substance. Don't just prepare on the facts. We've spent this podcast, and Mark, you and I have spent in many ways our professional careers talking and researching and training and helping people focus on the process of negotiation. So go through that process. Go through the strategic elements so that you negotiate based on the experts' proven research. And then one final thing, if I could, Mark, to leave the listeners with, protect and preserve your reputation.
Oh, so
your
important.
Reputation as an honest, ethical, credible professional negotiator. Not only is it the right way to negotiate, not only is it the ethical way to negotiate, it's also the most effective way to negotiate.
I love the way that you close that off, because that's so important, because you're going to be around for a lot longer than one deal. And if
exactly.
you screw up your reputation on one deal, that's the rest of your deal's credibility gone down the toilet. So I love the way that you close that. Marty, how do people follow you online?
Well, my Twitter address, I tweet a couple of pieces of negotiation advice every week. My Twitter address is @MartyLatz, MartyLatz. They can also find out more information about my training programs at latznegotiation.com. And for those of you who are interested just in videos as to how more effectively negotiate, columns I've written over the past 20-odd years, I have a free negotiation resource website at expertnegotiator.com.
And can you repeat the two books that you've written? for everyone?
Sure. The first one came out in 2004, Gain the Edge, yes. Negotiating to Get What You Want. And the one that came out just last year, and that generated, shall we say, some controversy on your previous podcast.
In a good way.
Yeah. Well, you know what? If you can get people to engage and think about this, whether agree with you or you disagree with you, you're helping them learn and improve.
That's right.
That book is called The Real Trump Deal, an eye-opening look at how he really negotiates.
Fantastic. And for the listeners, just so that you know, I highly recommend that you check out Marty's stuff online. His books are fantastic. The conversations that we've had are fantastic. Check out that last podcast. I'll link out to all the appropriate stuff so you don't have to go searching for it. But Marty, again, thank you so much for being on the show, man. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate the invite.
Hey friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go onto iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.